It's Monday, March 25th, and this is another episode of Sunday Golds. Arya Masudi, Brett Nevitt, a Florida State baseball podcast back on the airwaves. And we appreciate you guys for the support again. Apple Pods, Spotify, Google Pods, everywhere you can get it. Please leave us a review, 5 stars. It does make a difference and helps us to continue to push this thing out and reach as many people as possible. Well, I think we're just going to dive right in. It was a tough weekend at Doug Kingsmore Stadium for the baseball team. He gets swept. 3 games that were all pretty painful and embarrassing for their own reasons. You get run ruled, and then you blow 2 games in which you had massive leads, one of which you only needed 3 outs to get a victory against a top 5 team. And I know there's a lot of frustration right now amongst the fan base. I guarantee you there's frustration within that dugout, that clubhouse, that Florida State baseball program. Weekends like this are not fun, Brett. And I texted you and Kyler Peterson, who works for Perfect Game, and you guys made the trip up there. I hurt for you guys having to be there for all 3 of those. I know you've been chiseled and you're ironed up after some of the past few years that you've had to cover. However, nothing could have prepared you for what you saw in Clemson this weekend.
Yeah, like you said, it's a tough weekend, but you know, we talked about on the podcast how things can kind of crumble on you quickly at that park, and things just snowball you on in a hurry at that park, and they sure did this weekend. You know, just didn't handle the moment well, didn't respond to those moments very well on the mound, obviously. You know, I thought they did respond well to game one and then also to game two in the way they came out and played early in the game and swung the bats, and especially the way that Jamie pitched in game two. But ultimately, it's just a really big missed opportunity this weekend to go on the road and get a series win at a top 5 team in the country, and a team that's very, very good, and a lineup that's very good and very experienced. And I think overall the biggest thing with the pitchers is they just got behind in counts consistently. And when you do that against a really good, really experienced lineup, like, they're just going to take advantage of you over and over again. And just a lot of uncompetitive pitches, a lot of uncompetitive at-bats out of the bullpen. And obviously a couple starts that didn't completely go the way you wanted to either. So, you know, overall just a really tough weekend. You lose 2 games that you had a 99% or above win probability in at some point during the game, and you never really think that you're going to lose those games, but it happened 2 days in a row, and that stinks. But ultimately, I don't think it defines your whole season. And we've talked about there's going to be dips, like, they just come. This is what this sport is. It happens. And but you got to be tougher on the road. You got to be able to handle those moments better and step up when your team needs you to.
I agree with you, and I think on this pod, part of the reason I think it's gained so much traction amongst the fan base is we've kept it fair and we've been real. Multiple coaching staffs, we don't sugarcoat it, but I don't think it would be fair for us to come on here and just start ripping players and program and coaches and plans and philosophies. Like Brett said, it's really early in the year and things go up and down, right? And you just kind of hope that your season's peaking at the right time, because that's when the games mean the most later on in this campaign and in this season. So if you're looking for us to come on here and be ultra negative, I don't think that's really what we're going to do. But like we said, we're going to do our best here to keep things in perspective and to be honest and be fair about what we saw this weekend and the state of this Florida State baseball team right now. So that was very hard. And you and I think have talked about and prepared the listeners that Florida State hasn't exactly been preparing for this type of weekend all year. And that's a fair criticism, I think, is your non-conference schedule didn't do you any favors to get you ready for a weekend like this. You beat up on a bunch of teams that you should have beaten up on. That's what was impressive, that you did what you were supposed to do. However, my hope is that in the future, that Link does prepare his teams a little bit better with schedules to kind of provide them opportunities to kind of get out of their comfort zone early in the year so that they're ready for when it does get uncomfortable for them. I thought that exposed them this weekend. Obviously, I didn't think it would play out quite the way that it did. However, some of my concerns, and we put them out there last week and in the weeks following, the weeks prior, I should say, that I was going to be more interested, and you said it too, that we would be more interested to see how some of these young arms pitch, how some of these rotation arms pitch when you're facing this type of atmosphere on the road against that caliber of opponent. Because as you said, Clemson is a really good baseball team. That's a group that got a lot of guys back from a team that went pretty far last year, and I think has left a lot on the table, and they feel like that there's something to play for this year, right? There's an edge to Eric Backage's group. That's a top 10 baseball team, I think, safely all year long. But again, the Noles, I didn't think were prepared to handle that environment. They were kind of baptized by fire, so to speak.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's possible to prepare for that Clemson environment just because of how unique it is. I mean, I don't think there's any other place in the country that plays music at full blast after every single pitch when you're on the mound. I mean, it's just, it got absurd at some moments, the music. I mean, just after every single ball, they basically play the same song over and over again, played the same song, We Like to Party, 22 times in one inning at one point. I mean, it's just like, it's hard to explain if you weren't there how annoying that gets and how much it kind of gets to you and makes you just not even be able to focus. And like, we just saw a bunch of pitchers like just not be able to handle that moment and just like stuff tick down in moments where you feel like stuff should tick up in high leverage moments. And that's guys like getting tense and not knowing how to handle that type of environment. Whereas you see someone like Jamie Arnold, where it's just like slow heartbeat, like business as usual, like just go about it and do your thing, and you throw strikes because of that, because you're confident in what you're doing. And just like I said, when you get behind every batter the way they did, it just felt like 1-0, 2-0, and like those Clemson hitters aren't going to make mistakes, they're not going to miss mistakes, they're not going to swing at many pitches outside of the zone. And I we've talked about for a while the major most concerning part of the roster, I think, is the bullpen and just the depth of it now that you've lost some guys here. And the main concern with basically every single arm is command. Like that is the concern with mostly every single one of these arms, and that's the concern with most arms out there in the country at this point. But specifically on this staff, you look up and down, and prior history tells you with most of the guys that is the concern. And we just saw it all pile on top of each other in one weekend. And we hadn't really seen it come to the light so far, and it just all happened at once. And I think a large part of it had to do with the environment and the team that you were facing. But yeah, you got to be able to throw more strikes and get ahead and get leverage and more counts when you have to.
Yeah, and it had been building to this point, you know. And Brett, we talked about, you and I off the pod, of just, you know, how we got to this point with the bullpen, right? And I think the plan for the staff was different coming into the year than what they ended up having all the way around. You can probably shed some more light on that in terms of the arms that Florida State lost, not just this offseason to the draft, but you had some key injuries too that have kind of forced some of the younger arms to have to be put in those higher and higher leverage situations, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, you had three arms drafted too, which were one was a portal commitment, one was a JUCO commitment, and one was a high school commitment, that maybe you felt like you could have gotten all three of those on campus, but you didn't. But Gavin Adams did get drafted, but he didn't sign. But then at the beginning of the season, you lose him to TJ, and ultimately Gavin's another person who would struggle to find the strike zone. Like, that is Gavin's main concern, but you never really got to see how that would play out in games. Obviously Jacob Marlowe, who had the heart operations on his heart in the fall. Obviously, I don't think we're going to be able to see him this year either, and there's nothing you can really do about that one. And Jacob is one that would be a strike thrower for them and someone that fills up the zone and puts the ball in play for the most part. Who else am I missing? Am I thinking about someone else? Oh, Ben Barrett obviously hasn't been available for like the last 3 weeks or so, and I think Ben is the one out of this whole group that you feel like you can fall back on, and you just know that it's three pitches for strikes all the time. And maybe Ben will give up hard contact here and there, but Ben is someone that's just like a stabilizing presence. And without him there right now, and when you use Army in game one, you don't just have someone to fall back on, that you know, is always going to be in the strike zone, and someone that's been there and done that for you in this program before. So, yeah, I mean, it's just once you get into those sticky situations and you got to throw strikes and you got bases loaded, it's just who do you turn to? And, you know, so far they've been turning to Dorsey, and you know, that just hasn't worked out for Dorsey in any situation that he's come in with runners on base so far, I think. I think all the inherited runners, for the most part, that he's had on base have ended up scoring. And, you know, I think he gave up 2 grand slams to Wright this weekend and has given up 3 so far this season. So, you know, you just have to kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit with the bullpen. But, you know, I think you just – for those guys, they got to get back out there and try to get some confidence back after how bad this weekend went, how quickly it unraveled on them. Because, for the most part, those guys had success so far this season, and they haven't faced adversity yet. And, I mean, heck, the weekend before, we felt like the bullpen was the reason that they closed down a sweep and the reason that they won the series. Like, that's just how this goes sometimes. It's a week-to-week thing, and you just got to hope that you can right the ship as quick as possible with that.
And Clemson's red hot right now, Brett. I mean, I'm looking at their offensive numbers as of late, and, I mean, they've scored 13, 11, 15, 9, 4, 14 against Florida State in that final game. So, I mean, they're on a tear. They're ripping the cover off the baseball, and their lineup's deep 1 through 9. You and I talked about how we didn't think we would see a lineup quite like that the rest of the year for Florida State. Certainly you're going to have some good ones the rest of the year, but maybe not that Clemson team playing in their own home park. And talk about the environment a little bit, not just, you know, what they were doing with the marketing team and over the speakers with the music, but like the park played really small this weekend. It's already a small park, one of the smaller ones in the ACC with the dimensions. But when the wind is blowing out the way that it was, and I think a lot of that had to do with the front that had come through and postponed Friday's game to a doubleheader Saturday with the rain. I mean, that becomes, I mean, like a rocket launcher of a park. It's mm-hmm. easy to get it out.
Yeah, I mean, without the wind, it's 310, I think, what, down left, and 320 down right, or maybe inverse of that. But 360 in the gaps and 390 to center, but I think it's actually like 380 to center, because there's homers that have gone out to center field that measure at like 380 feet. So, yeah, and then when you add in that wind that was there, I think on Saturday the park was probably playing, I don't know, 280 down the lines, 350 to center. It just, any ball that got up in the air, it just felt like it was going to leave. I've never really seen anything like it. The way that the wind was playing into that game. And then obviously they have the hill in the outfield too. And, you know, Clemson used that hill to its advantage to take away home runs from Florida State and make really good plays. And FSU, on the other hand of it, they struggled with the hill in left field especially. And that cost them a couple times, and multiple different players out there struggled with it. And, you know, I think going into the weekend, we felt like the defense for Florida State was going to be their biggest advantage. And I think ultimately Clemson played a lot better defense than you this weekend. And, you know, sometimes that's where, you know, it's just the moments and how you handle it. And even though you had a way better fielding percentage coming in and stuff, and really I think you might have made the same amount of errors this weekend as Clemson, but the amount of like great outstanding plays that Clemson made to take away hits and to make timely plays and steal momentum from you that you just couldn't make those plays. There were a couple balls hit the shortstop that probably could have been caught that weren't, that went for hits. Obviously there were 2 balls in left field that fell for doubles that could have been errors, but you didn't even touch the ball. There was a throw from first base that ended up in an error, an errant pickoff. It just wasn't what we had seen to this point so far this season from the pitchers or the defense. And, you know, that involves everybody. I mean, that's starters too. It all starts with Leiter only giving you two plus innings on the first game of the weekend. So, yeah, just all around, it wasn't what we had seen to this point. And it's concerning because it's the first time really being, in that environment. But like you said, I don't think they'll have that type of environment again this year, at least till the postseason.
It's unique. And I thought they did a good job defensively as well. Really nice job robbing Max Williams a couple times of home runs.
We just measured center field at Doug Kingsmore Stadium on Google Earth. It's 374 to center field.
I believe it. I mean, there were There were some home runs hit, like Cannarella hit one that I thought was a pop fly. It was a legitimate, like, in at Hauser, that's nowhere near the warning track in center field.
And obviously it's playing that way for both teams, but that just makes it why you can't give the free passes and stuff like you did, because with the way it was playing, it was so easy to so quickly put up crooked numbers like they did. I mean, it's just...
It's been that way, though, Brett, for years. Like, their dimensions aren't what they are. I mean, it's Clemson.
They did move him in a couple years ago, I think, like 10 feet or something.
Why?
10 years ago.
Was that when they put the grandstands?
I think so. They might have
left
been.
And left
yeah.
center?
Yeah.
So you're playing at basically a softball field. I mean...
Well, I mean, like I said, it plays the same way for both teams. It's just that... That magnifies so much the mistakes that you're making to put base runners on the base without them making them even do anything except just take pitches. And
that's a unique place to play, man.
When it's 4-pitch walks and 5-pitch walks, especially from like redshirt seniors that you have on the mound, like that's stuff that you just can't have. You just can't have it, especially on the days when the park is playing that small and things can just snowball you in a hurry like they did. Like, watching it, you just felt like, all right, if this happens and then this happens and then this happens, then, yeah, possibly they could come back. And every single one of those possibilities, they would just happen, like, right away.
So Google Earth says, or Google Maps says...
Google Earth.
Google Earth.
If you go and measure it from center.
375.
Yeah.
I mean, there are high school parks that are deeper than that. Legitimately.
It is what it is.
Okay, anyway... That's not the reason Florida State got swept. That's I don't want to get besides the point. That is amazing though. When you measured out, I knew it was a small park. I didn't know it was quite that small. The bullpen, we talked about how some of these younger arms needed to be put into that situation, right? Brett, they're going to rely on these arms the rest of the year. I think for me, if Florida State ends up making a regional, hosting a regional, which would be the next step. If they even got beyond that round, this group of freshmen is going to factor into the bullpen, right? Like, they're going to need these guys to be able to gain this experience, to continue to be put in those scenarios, in those situations. And you hope you learn from them. Because, again, the high leverage moments, you are going to count on this group. There really is no path in which you use anybody else. Like, you're going to count on them to get to your season goals.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in the long term, in the long run of this season, you have to have those guys contribute for you because of the injuries that have happened to Marlowe and to Adams. And you need those guys to step up for you early on. But, you know, like I said, you also need the older guys to fulfill their roles and do their job so that they take some pressure off the freshmen. But, yeah, I mean, obviously in game two, you have Hudson on the mound. He threw scoreless eighth, and they brought him back out for the ninth. And, you know, I think he got ahead of the first hitter, but hit him with a 2-strike pitch in the elbow. And then a 4-pitch walk on 4 straight fastballs up above the zone. And then he took him out after that to go to Abraham, who, you know, obviously we had seen Abraham succeed the last time he was out there in a really big way. I think, what was it, three scoreless innings he threw the last time he was on the mound, and it looks really good and the best it really has looked stuff-wise and performance-wise. And, I mean, John came out. And it just, the velo was way down. The stuff was way down. It seemed like he was just trying to guide the ball into the zone. And that led to obviously the home run for Wright. And they get a couple more guys on base. And, you know, it's just at some point you got to put them out there to try to figure it out and try to figure out how to do it. And, you know, it's really hard to figure it out in that environment. And they weren't able to do that. And you just hope that they can get back to the point that they were at before that and not, you know, have it be something that trends going forward and just, you know, have it be a one-time thing and fix the mistakes that you made there. But yeah, just, you got to have the experience. You got to do it at some point. And it just turns out that trying to get that experience this time, it ended up resulting in something really bad and ended up blowing a lead like you did. And yeah, it's just...
I know, you're at a loss for words because it's hard.
It's just crazy. I mean, like I said, you had a 99.91 win probability in, I think, game two. I think you had 99.5 win probability in game three. And you end up winning none of the games in the series. It's just... you can't do what you did to Jamie Arnold after what he gave you. You can't do what you did to the offense on Sunday after the response they gave you. But, you know, I think the sixth inning on Sunday, you can accept it a little bit more. It's just like four straight singles off Whitaker, and a couple of them are single. Oh gosh. A couple of them just get through the infield, but, you know, a couple of them are hard hit. But, you know, at least you're trying to attack hitters and you're in the zone and you're just giving up hits. But, I mean, the next inning is it's five walks and a grand slam. They scored six runs on one hit. Like, you just...
That can't happen.
You're not just not making people work for it at that point.
It's not
point.
Winning and, baseball.
And you're behind in every single count. You're 2-0, 3-0 in every single count. You're not giving yourself any chance to have any success. And especially when you're up as many runs as you are, like, all you got to do is just put it in the strike zone. But it's a lot harder to do than to say it is. And especially, like I said, it's just that music. I mean, it just gets so annoying. It makes you feel like you're in an insane asylum with that music going on.
They
it's
knew,
just
they
it's,
knew they
it's,
had you. They knew they had Florida State shook, and I think Clemson's dugout knew it. They were feeding into it. But at the end of the day, Brett, the bullpen walked 14 guys on the weekend. Like, that's just like you said, it's not competitive. It's not even forcing Clemson to really beat you. Blake Wright beat you. Yeah. Every time he got a shot. I didn't think much else in terms of – I thought the Clemson lineup as a whole was good, but I thought the rest of them were pitchable. I thought all the rest of those kids were – you could pitch to them. You could figure it out. They just have right now maybe the hottest hitter in college baseball in Blake Wright.
And he came up in all the right moments.
Right. It was like a script was written for him to come up with guys on base, right? Three guys on base, two guys on base. He made you pay every time. Give him credit. That kid's a star. I mean, he was hot coming into the weekend, and he stayed red hot. But from the bullpen, you just need guys to come in and compete.
Well, you just need guys to come in and be the aggressor. Like, you need guys to come in and realize that they are the ones that control the outcome. Like, if you're the one with the ball in your hand. Like, just go and get it. Like, be the aggressor. Get in leveraged counts. Get strike one and go from there. I mean, it's just. If you had just gotten 50% more strike ones than you had, it just you're gonna win because of getting in leverage counts and being able to go to your stuff at that point. But it felt like they got behind, and instead of this stuff ticking up, it ticked down because they were trying to guide the ball and get it in the zone. And it was like I said, it's a snowball effect where it just feels like it goes from one person to the next. It's just contagious. It's like when you're hitting as much as you hit, like that gets contagious. When you're not throwing strikes, that also. It's a weird sport, man. It just gets away from you so quick sometimes. And you had so much success for so long. And then
momentum's real in this sport, yeah. Too. I believe it. I believe it heavily. But the thing is, too, man, like, we hadn't seen this yet. Not like this.
At the same time, it's so disappointing because they showed you the ability to respond after getting one run ruled in game one. You saw Jamie Arnold that he is one of the best pitchers, if not the best pitcher in the country so far this year. But then Jamie was going to be 6-0 after six starts if you hold a 7-run lead. You come out and you respond again on Sunday. You put up 11 runs. I mean, what did they hit, 13, 14 home runs this weekend? And like we said, the park was playing small, but for the most part, like, those balls are gone anywhere. Like 430-foot plus home runs. I mean, a lot of those balls are gone anywhere. And I mean,
sure.
You show that you have the capability of sticking in there and playing with a top five team in the country. And
you looked better than a top five team in the country
for a large part of it.
Yeah, like, it wasn't. There were Gamecock fans coming into Clemson fans' mentions on social media saying things like, "It's funny you guys are beating your chests because Florida State looks better than you."
I think the very last thing we said about the series before was it's going to come down to what the bullpens do. And the only difference in the series was Clemson's bullpen threw strikes and Florida State's didn't.
That's it. Simple.
Like, Clemson had a guy in there throwing 83 miles per hour from a low slot.
But strikes.
But he was just throwing strikes.
Correct. Made Florida State put it in play. But I also saw all weekend, you know, from social media, like, on the Twitter sphere, Florida State this, oh, they can't do this. This can't continue. This can't keep happening. It hasn't happened. That's where I can't really comment on social media. I get all these messages because of, you know, I'm not technically outside media covering the team. I'm not going to sit there and rip a team mid-game. I can't do that, and I won't do that. You guys know that listening on this pod, that I'm not going to jeopardize my relationships getting to call games with Florida State baseball and all that. But, like, some of the things that I see are, like, it's almost like a football mentality where it's like one game they think ends the whole season. Like, it's absolutes. People speak in absolutes on Twitter like it's a defined, definite, absolute 100%. I'm like, most of these kids have pitched well all year. You know? This isn't a bad bullpen. Why? I watched them shut down Notre Dame last weekend. Right? Like, nobody was saying FSU's trash last weekend when they swept Notre Dame, who, by the way, just won 2 out of 3 against Miami. So, in case we were wondering, is Notre Dame any good? They're not as bad as some people tried to make them out to be. And so this is the part where we talk about being fair on this pod. This is the first time all season I have seen this group not handle a situation well. I'll admit, as I said at the top of the show, some of the schedule probably contributes to not being ready for this weekend. But I think it's more you're not ready for the weekend than it is you're not capable of winning a weekend like this. There's a difference. Does that make sense? First road test of the year, FSU didn't handle its first road test. We said this would be...
I think they showed that they're completely capable. Correct. They blew it.
We said this would be an exam, right, for the group.
Yeah.
They didn't pass the exam.
No.
They're still plenty capable, and they're going to have a lot of opportunities this year. I mean, you still got a ton of big-name heavy hitters on your schedule. I'm excited to see how they respond. This next week against Louisville will tell me everything I need to know about this 2024 Florida State baseball team. How they respond against Florida, which is going to be a tough game tomorrow night in Jacksonville, will tell me a lot. However, I know this, and I think we need to start talking about some positives. You know, I think we've hit on enough things that'll make us feel bad about ourselves and sad and negative and pessimistic. Here's what has me optimistic. One, like you said, Jamie Arnold is a true ace. I'm sold. Done. That kid's a star. Probably a first-round draft pick in his career when it's all said and done. Knock on some wood so he stays healthy, but it's trending to be a pretty nasty top 10 type of pick with what he can do. He did that against that lineup, Brett. I'm ready to talk about something good. Jamie Arnold shut down that lineup with all those kids that had been red hot. It was one of the best performances I've actually seen from a Florida State pitcher when you factor in the strength of the opponent in quite a few years.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, like you said, Jamie's going to be a first-round pick next year in all most likelihood. And I was confident in what Jamie was going to do this weekend just because of how confident he has been himself in the fastball to just go and get it and, like, just not allow teams to just walk and get free bases, because he knows when he's in the zone that, for the most part, teams just aren't going to be able to hit him. And it's just the fastball up in the zone is just, it's just unhittable. I mean, he could signal it to batters, and it's just so hard to get on from that slot and the way that it rides up in the zone. And especially the slider just continues to get better and better, and he's mixing the changeup variation in there as well. And like I said earlier, it's just like the heartbeat, it always stays the same for Jamie. Like, he's a little more intense this year, but the biggest thing for Jamie is, like, you just never see him, you know, I don't think the moment ever gets to Jamie. Like, he's just there, and he's ready to do his thing and put the fastball in the strike zone and then try and go get strikeouts with it up in the zone and the slider down and outside the zone. So, yeah, I mean, that was impressive as it gets. It was just what you expect for Jamie at this point. I mean, what is the K to walk ratio this year? I think it's,
gotcha,
like 50-7 at this point or something like that. And
53-7.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, this
batters
as good as it gets.
Batters are hitting 172, Brett.
There's no way anyone's been better than Jamie so far this year. I mean, I know
2 earned runs.
Yeah. I mean, I know Burns has done what he's done, but just the execution that Jamie's done consistently day in, day out, the way he's pounded the strike zone, the way he's limited hitters, the way he's stranded runners on base, the way he's pitched with a runner on third base in less than 2 outs, like everything you've needed Jamie to do, he's done. And it's been awesome to watch.
You and I had this conversation too over the weekend. What impresses most about Jamie, he gets better as the outing goes along, right? Like, pitches 75 to near 100 for him. I mean, they were still mid-90s fastballs, but his command got even better. And he had this, like, ruthlessness and this killer instinct to kind of come in and just shut the door down. He was sequencing. We saw sliders first pitch, fastballs when he needed them, inside, outside, lefties, righties. It didn't matter. He had it working. And that's the type of ace I think you want, the type of mentality you want from your top pitcher on the staff.
Yeah, I mean, Jamie's just someone that's really low effort, and it's all so loose and easy that he's not really going to dip through outings. Like, he's shown that at this point of this year that he's going to hold the velocity deep into outings, and I think he was throwing, 96 into the seventh inning still, and we'd seen him up to 96 in the sixth inning so far this year, and it's just everything about it. I mean, it's just been beautiful to watch so far. Pitching doesn't get much better than what he's done, and I think he walked two batters in the first inning, I think, and didn't walk any after that, and I mean, it's just, like you said, he just gets better and better the deeper he gets into outings, and the execution gets better and better. Like, the slider execution gets better and better. I think if he could get the slider to back foot of right-handed hitters too, more and more, like, that's going to unlock a whole nother phase of Jamie's game, and he's just going to get better and better if he does that. But yeah, like I said, I don't think there's anyone that's been better than him so far this year.
Not in the country. You're right. Certainly not in the ACC. How much fun has it been for you to see him from the first day he stepped foot on campus? Well, really, you knew about him when they signed him, that he had some funk to him. There was some pitchability. There was some ability. There was some makeup there to turn into something. You didn't know how it would quite progress. To see it come to fruition like this, how cool has that been for you who's followed his career?
Yeah, I think development is the most fun thing to watch about doing this job and seeing how guys grow over the years. I mean, I think the first time I saw Jamie was in 2020, and he went to the same high school as me, so follow those Jesuit kids a little closer than the others, and keep in touch with Coach Menendez about how those guys are doing. And like I've said before, I don't think anyone expected what Jamie's become at this point, at least not this quick. I don't think the staff that committed him before, I don't think they ever expected this. I mean, heck, Jimmy Bellinger got to watch it from across the way this weekend. I think he was as impressed as it gets, and just with what he was doing. And, it's just the velocity, the way it's come out and the way he's holding it, I don't know if I ever expected it to be that. But, you know, we always knew that Jamie had the pitchability and, like, that looseness, the easiness that he has on the mound. You always knew there was more in there. I just don't know if we expected it to be this much more and this dominant. As a sophomore, I mean, he's not a draft eligible guy this year. You got a whole nother year, Jamie, next year. And I mean, I think when Jamie committed, he was like in the low 80s still at that time. And in high school, when I saw him, he was mostly in like the 86, 88 range and being able to reach into the low 90s from time to time, but was never really someone that was, you know, rearing back for a ton of velocity. But since he's gotten here and the mechanics have smoothed out this year, and he's opening up his hips and is able to fire from that and, you know, put on a little bit of strength. And as the confidence continues to grow, he just throws harder and harder. And yeah, it's been awesome to watch.
True ace, no doubt about it. I thought Connor Whitaker threw pretty well again against that lineup. Got you into the sixth inning, five pretty good ones. And I know they started to get some soft contact on him, and maybe, you know, he didn't have the luck that he needed to in the sixth to get out of it. But he did what you want for a Sunday guy, right, in college baseball. He gave you a shot. And with the offense you have up until the bullpen, right, that is the good combination there. With Knoll's offense on a Sunday, Connor Whitaker on the mound, you're going to put yourself in a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I think Witt would tell you he was pretty disappointed just with the way that outing ended, and obviously having the lead they did and not being able to hammer it home and get through that sixth inning and putting up a zero in the sixth inning and how big that would have been. But, yeah, I mean, through the first five innings, Witt had a really good outing. Obviously just made the one mistake to give up the two-run homer to Mathis, I believe, and then four straight singles to start the sixth, end his outing, and that allows one run to score, and then all three runners he left on base score. So I think he had six runs on his line and moved the ERA up to like a 4.9. And I mean, Witt gave you what you needed through the first five innings, and you weren't able to help him much defensively or out of the bullpen in the sixth inning. There's a ball in left field that maybe could have been caught. I think for the most part, you know Witt's going to get you five, six innings every time he's out there. And like you said, that should give you a chance to win on Sundays if your bullpen can get the job done. I think, you know, it's just you look back to the first game of the weekend and not getting more than 9 outs from your starter in that game. It puts you in a tough situation where you have to use Army there. And then, You're just a little bit more shorthanded by you get to game three. So if you get three quality starts out of the weekend like you had been in the past weeks, that's another thing where it's just like you just didn't do what you had been doing to this point. And that's part of taking that step up in competition and taking that step up in the environment. And you need Leiter to be better going forward. You need him to be more consistent. And I just think that all starts with fastball command and getting ahead in counts and getting more leverage counts.
I was going to ask you what you made of his start, because I know that he's coming out, you know, typically as the number one against another team's ace. Jamie Arnold's been your best pitcher on the year. That conversation about who is your Friday night guy, I think, you know, we had some back and forth on with this being a short week against Louisville and you have to play Thursday instead of Friday. You know, you have that Thursday through Saturday series with Easter coming up. It might be difficult to make changes, but I do think on the back end of that, when you go from Saturday to Friday, everyone's got has got the extra day of rest. That might be interesting to see what Florida State does, but you do have to start the conversation, I think, Brett, of trying to figure out who your number one is on Friday nights. Jamie Arnold's looked like the better pitcher right now. Leiter, I still think, has the stuff of a future first-round pick. I just think it's going to take some more time to polish it up and maybe a change of scenery there from him going from Fridays to Saturdays, not the worst thing for his development going forward. I was curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can do it this week just because of the timeline. Like, I know Jamie and Cam threw on the same day, but I think Cam threw 79 pitches and Jamie threw 110. So when you're moving up to Thursday next week, like, I don't even know if anybody will. I don't know if one of those three guys 100% will start on Thursday. Obviously, on 2 days less rest than you're usually going to get for Cam, and 1 day less rest than you're usually going to get for Jamie if he was to go on Friday. But yeah, I think you do probably have that conversation at this point just because of how good Jamie's been and kind of with the ups and downs that Cam's had. But I think they've got a lot of trust and a lot of faith in what Cam's going to be and what he's going to do for them. Just with the intensity that he pitches with. And, you know, I believe that they think he can be a lot more consistent than he's been so far. And that's what he had shown them in the fall and the preseason was consistency on a week-to-week basis. And you need to get that back. I think a lot of that comes with getting the slider back to being a consistent pitch for him. I think usually the biggest thing with Cam is he has enough pitches that he's able to fall back on something. But I just didn't think he had anything to fall back on this week. And usually I think the curveball is that pitch that he does fall back on, that he can just flip over for strikes and whenever he wants. But, you know, when they were getting him in the stretch a lot, I think he was struggling to find the rhythm of his pitches. He was spiking the curveball a couple times pretty short of the plate. I think when Cannarella's ball got out of the park, it frustrated him a good bit just because it seemed like a good pitch, like a changeup out on the outer half that Cannarella kind of just poked at and ended up flying out of the yard. I think that bugged him a good bit, and he struggled to kind of settle in after that and just throw strikes and pitch the way he needed to after that. Like, he's just really struggled recently to get ahead in counts and be in leverage counts. Like, and he talked about it on the podcast when we talked to him, how big Posey is on leverage, and when they get in leverage counts, they're successful. And when they're not, we saw what happened this weekend. Like, that is the difference. Like, you got to get to two strikes before the hitter gets to two balls. And I would think that the percentage of what they did that at this week outside of Jamie was really, really poor.
Yeah, I also think, you know, with the struggles of the bullpen, it does, I think, highlight how much more important it's going to be for these starters to consistently get you into the sixth and seventh inning, right? And kind of be able to give Link and Mike Posey a chance to plan for the weekend with the arms. When we mentioned Army not available really for game two because he pitched game one, you'd have loved to have him available there with the lead to shut that down. Because you and I both feel very confidently up 8-1, Andrew Armstrong would have factored in somewhere on Saturday, on game two Saturday, I should say, and would have got the job done there. So that's tough. But projecting forward, you need Leiter to go six. You need Arnold to go six. You need Whitaker to go five or six, depending on what you have left for the weekend. That's got to be the path to success for FSU. I still believe in some of these bullpen arms. Like, I think there is a couple of those freshmen that will take the next step forward. I hope that that's in 2 months and not a year from now, if that makes sense, when they're sophomores. But for right now, for this for these next couple of weekends, I just think you the importance of your rotation carrying the mantle for the pitching staff, I think, needs to take a step forward. I mean, Arnold's given it to you. Whitaker's given it to you, I think, in his own way, right? In the way that he pitches 5 to 6 innings, you need more from Leiter, because I think FSU does have a very high ceiling with this group, but it does take all of these things to click, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like Link always talks about, it just starts with the starters, and you're trying to minimize the amount of game that the bullpen has to control. But, you know, this weekend, I mean, Saturday, the game two, and Jamie did his job, and you just let it get away from you in one inning, and just that way it crumbled. But, yeah, it all, like you said, it all starts with the starter on game one not being able to eat up more outs and give your bullpen less of work to do, and take some more stress off of them. But yeah, I think I still believe in what Leiter is going to give them in the long run. I saw it too consistently for all of fall in the preseason, and I think there's some things he needs to iron out there mechanically to get a little bit more consistent. But this, at the end of the day, like, he's usually going to have something to fall back on and still be able to go get outs and keep hitters off balance. But, you know, when you don't have anything going really against that Clemson lineup, they're going to take advantage of you. And, you know, especially when the wind's blowing out the way it was in that park, like, it's just, it's hard to minimize damage in that park and in that environment with that wind and that lineup. It's just, it's a really, really tough scenario, and you got to be able to throw strikes and get ahead in counts. And, you know, Cam just hasn't done that consistently enough so far this year.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I do like the ceiling of a Cam Leiter. I do believe that kid's going to pitch in the big leagues. I think the pedigree's there, the family name, all of that, the stuff. I like Leiter a lot, but it doesn't need to come together. Can we stay on the positive track, though? This offense continues to hit the baseball at an elite clip. This was the best, I think, weekend of arms that they were going to face. I know Tristan Smith didn't end up throwing for Clemson with an injury, but I thought this offense again showed you a hunger, an ability to hunt. They come out swinging out of the gates, no pun intended, but like Jaime Ferrer grand slam, right? Immediately, game one. The way this offense mashes, it's deep, it's talented, versatility, lefties, righties. I think this group can carry you for large portions of the year. And they almost won you a weekend by themselves. That's a really good sign. This is a vastly improved offense. And Devin Travis and I, former Florida State All-American and big leaguer, and he does commentary, as you guys know, with the ACC Network, we were talking about how this lineup reminds us of some vintage Florida State lineups that he used to play with James Ramsey, Tyler Holt, Jace Boyd, so on and so forth. It's just got a number of guys that can leave the park, and you saw it this weekend. 1 through 9, you can get beat from either of those spots, from any of those spots, I should say.
Yeah, I think it's just what we've talked about a lot, just the depth of the physicality, 1 through 9. I think 7 of 9 spots in the lineup hit a home run this weekend. I think everybody but Faroe and the catchers, but everybody else had at least one home run. I think what Cam had 2, Jaime had 2, Tibbs had 2 in one game. Dinges had 2, I believe, as well. Like, there's just so much physicality in the group that you have, and when they get in that ballpark with the way it was playing this weekend, like, they're going to put a lot of runs up on the board, and they're going to hit a lot of home runs, and you know, guys like Cam Smith, Jaime Ferrer, James Tibbs, those are guys that you know you can count on all year, and having that 2 through 4. You know, Max Williams showed up this week as well too, but in the power in his bat, that one home run he hit was an absolute bomb, and you saw his power come out, and he potentially could have had 2 more home runs this weekend. Clemson doesn't make 2 really good plays at the wall in center and right field. So, yeah, it was outside of game one, offensively, I was really pleased with what they did. I just felt like game one that they let Darden get off the hook a bit, and they just let Darden get a lot of quick, easy outs against them after that first inning grand slam. And there just were, I think he only had like 50 or 55 pitches in the last five or six innings that he threw. And I just felt like they needed to make him work harder to get outs because they showed in the first inning that they had the ability to impact the baseball against him. But they just a lot of easy outs in that first game. But outside of that, they proved their physicality all weekend.
I thought some of these newcomers showed well on the weekend. I thought Cantu, cool to see him get some home runs. You know, I think that's been coming. He's got the power there, experienced, and just comes up kind of big in situations that you need him to. Dingus, Lodis, those were two that I think we were curious to see how they would do once they got into ACC play. Both, I thought, had really nice weekends, too, and some really good swings.
Yeah, I think Cantu, obviously, it's just experience, like, been there, done that, like we've talked about. But, yeah, he obviously hadn't hit a home run to that point in the season. I think he hit 11 at USF last year. So people were kind of wondering where the power was at. But it showed it with one swing. I think the homer he hit was 435 feet or something like that. Lodis hit a couple home runs to the pole side. And Dingus, I think that, you know, hit that laser in the ninth inning on Sunday, hit another ball that was hit pretty far to left center. So it was good to see all three of those guys in their first, you know, road experience on the ACC. You know, they put together results and drove the ball, like you would hope they would and how they've shown in the past. And, you know, with Marco, I just think there's so much impact there with the swing, and he's really shown the ability to hit, and just everything he hits seems to come off the bat really extremely hard. So, you just all the way through the lineup, like we've talked about for so long, it's just there's physicality and a potential to impact the game with one swing.
Speaking of people that impact the game with one swing and in so many other ways, I'm really going to miss watching James Tibbs play baseball. I really enjoy watching him hit. It's like watching a big leaguer against kids, right? Like, he spits on the stuff he should spit on. He gets into the leverage counts. He makes you pay first pitch. If it's a heater, he knows it's coming. If it's off speed, he's sitting on it. He has such an advanced feel for hitting a baseball that it's one of the kids that I really wish Florida State's program during his time had been playing at a more prestigious level, because he would be mentioned in the same breath, in my opinion, as some of those big-time names that you guys are all familiar with that have come through Florida State. He's elite. That kid can play. Watching him, I mean, Canuck's a good pitcher and had a lot of success all year. And James Tibbs owned him. Like, it was a complete ownage. Pull side, opposite field, spraying the ball. Brett, I mean, again, I'm going to miss watching that kid play baseball. I hope Noles fans really savor what he's doing, you know, for the rest of the year, because this is a kid, again, who's going to get drafted, in my opinion, very, very highly.
Yeah, I do find it funny kind of how national people are just kind of coming around and realizing what James Tibbs is. Like, he's done this for 2 years now. Like, this isn't something new. I mean, James is the first FSU player since Mike McGee to have three 10-plus home run seasons in a row. And, I mean, he hit 300 as a freshman with 12 home runs. He hit 330-plus last year with 17 home runs. He's already got 10 this year. And, you know, as soon as Jaime took the lead, team lead from him with 9 home runs, he came back the next day and took it back with a 2-homer game. And already Tibbs' third multi-homer game of the season. First home run he hit off of Canuck came on a 3-1 changeup that, you know, he got and up in the zone and was able to lift it out to center field. I think he missed that a little bit, actually, but the wind was still able to push it out to center. But next AB got a fastball up in the zone and just drove it the other way with ease for an opposite field homer. I thought he took some good routes in right field this week as well for the most part. There was one ball that I think he would have wanted to have back. I think there was a diving play. I don't think maybe it was when Jamie was pitching. I think it was lefty that was on the mound that a ball down the right field line he didn't get. But outside of that, I thought he played the hill well for the most part and caught some balls near the wall that he took good routes on. So, yeah, I think Tibbs he's someone that is rising up draft boards and someone that's getting a lot more attention nationally now. But I mean, he's just doing what he's always done in his Florida State career to this point.
Yeah, good kid, good family. Happy to see that for him. So offense continues to bang, man. I mean, it's a good attack. It's going to be all year, I think. Stay healthy. They did it without Diamez Ross for another weekend. Hopefully he's back in the mix soon for FSU.
Diamez was at Clemson. He was going through, like, pregame activities and stuff. Like usual, he hadn't done that in the past three games before this weekend since he had been out. So it was good to see him kind of moving around, and it looked like he was working his way back to getting back in the mix soon.
Very nice. Trying to think of if we missed anything in terms of breaking down the weekend. Is there anything else you want to touch on the weekend, or can we start projecting forward in terms of what we want to see and what this means for FSU for the rest of the year?
I mean, so many guys had multi-homer weekends, right? And I think Jaime, Lodice, like we talked about, and if you just keep getting the physical performances like that from the lineup, like, you're going to have success. You're not going to blow up like you did every weekend, like you did this weekend with the bullpen. Like, it just, I don't think it's even possible to do that again, like, two times in a row. And I think you need to get more consistently out of the starters. But this is a weird week coming up, kind of, with now you got to go straight into Florida on Tuesday in Jackson. And it's another 3 hours on the bus, probably after 7 hours on the bus there and back from Clemson. So, and then Louisville comes in on Thursday because Easter Sunday. So you got to rebound quick and try to figure it out quick. It's a tough little part of the schedule right here.
Yeah, and I think there's some people wondering about ACC tournament and regionals and all that. At the end of the day, folks, you're still 19-3.
It's a long process.
You're still in a good spot. I think RPI-wise, you're number two after the weekend. Strength of schedule of 10. You're going to still play some really good teams. I think your RPI, if you take care of business, will be fine. I still think this is a team that has hosting a regional in front of it. However, you're going to have to put series wins together, right? I don't think – I'll say it this way, Brett. I didn't think they would sweep Notre Dame, and they did. And I didn't think they would get swept by Clemson, and they did.
By following it up with getting swept, you basically take away
– correct.
You just take away what you did the prior weekend.
Even slate. So yeah. Now it becomes – you've got Louisville still – at home, remind me of the home series, Georgia Tech, Miami, NC State.
Yeah, that's it,
right?
Yeah.
So you got that. You've got the game against Florida at home still. So that could be a big RPI opportunity. But then your road tilts are difficult. They're really difficult. And we've talked about this on the pod about your road ACC slate this year was a doozy. And it was at Wake, at Duke, at Pitt, and at Boston College haven't been cakewalks for Florida State in the past just because of interesting conditions at times. I named every road.
Yeah,
so the top 15 opponents for the most part are on the road. NC State's going to be a good one at home for you to hopefully capitalize on what will be a big weekend. But Brett, everything's out in front of them. Some things need to shore up. They need to get a bit healthier. I just think they need to take care of business and you asked me, I remember we had that conversation, what kind of weekend is this? Is this one where they melt down, or is this one where they can bounce back from? I think it's completely up to that team right now in the Florida State clubhouse.
Yeah, I mean, like we've said, these are long seasons, and we've said that there are dips coming. Like, these things happen. Like, at some point in a 55-game baseball season, there's going to be a really bad weekend, and we had a really bad weekend, a pretty brutal weekend, but... like, it doesn't define really your season. And like you said, as of now, you're number two in RPI. It's not like all of a sudden you're cratering and you need to go into panic mode or anything like that. And like we said, like, you competed. It's not like you're incapable. It's not like all of a sudden you're just not a decent team, a good team anymore. Like, you need to play with the same confidence, same, you know, cockiness that you have, just because... I mean, you got to have intensity. You can't just, now that you've lost some games, lose that intensity. And, you know, this week coming up is another good opportunity to bounce back from it. Obviously, Florida is always going to be intense, and you know, you got to try to figure out what you have available arms-wise and how you want to plan this week out with the Thursday through Saturday series. But, yeah, man, I'm not worried about postseason and that type of stuff right now. Like, things will work itself out. It's a long way to go, and you're just trying to figure out the day-to-day process, the week-to-week process of how things are progressing. And it was a step back this weekend, but you're able to take two steps forward this week if you can.
I think you're never really as good as you think you are, right?
You're never as bad as
you think you are. You're somewhere in the middle. I still believe this Florida State team, you know, the median, so to speak, of what they are is a pretty good ball club.
Yeah.
It's a good baseball team. I safely believe it's a top 20 type baseball team for the year. They have too good of an offense. I think they have high end pitching on the starters, and I think they'll have enough in the bullpen to at least put together a very respectable season especially compared to what you've seen the last couple of years, right? So
getting Ben Barrett back would go a real long way for the pitching staff. It just would.
Correct. So, you know, for me, it's going to be, can you take it one weekend at a time? Can you find a way to be able to flush this and to kind of handle the marathon of the season? This season's going to take a few more dips, in my opinion. I also think Clemson's going to have a humbling experience at some point this year. Every team has it. Wake Forest has been humbled numerous times to start this season, and people were pegging them as, remember, like it was an Omaha lock to make it back. So every fan base right now is going up and down trying to figure it out. The Florida Gators are 14-9 after everybody threw them as a top five team. And then guess what they did this weekend? They beat LSU twice in Baton Rouge. So,
and 99% of college baseball teams are trying to figure out their bullpen. Like, that's a yearly long process of trying to figure out what you have in the bullpen. And maybe you need to move somebody that you have more trust into the bullpen and stuff like that. Like, you just, this is something that is ever changing, and you're trying to figure answers out the whole season. And yeah, you certainly got to try to figure out answers quick after that weekend.
For sure. Everything's still out in front for this baseball team. It's never a bad thing, I think, to be humbled. You came back down to earth this weekend. I think that's about it. There were some people, I'm not sure if they actually believe this team would go 64-0. And I think there might have been a couple. Just judging on some of the comments that I see on social media, I'm like, wow, you really thought this baseball team was never going to lose. It's like, are you, and I don't mean it disrespectfully, but like, are you new to baseball? This can't be the first time you've tuned into a baseball season, college or pro. You know?
Yeah.
I'm used to this. I'm a Braves fan. We get humbled often. So like,
I mean,
this is a marathon. It goes up and it goes down. And at the end of the day, I'd like to be peaking towards the end of the year, whatever it means, right? Yeah, whatever this path looks like, I need it to be going up the graph, the bar graph, so to speak, and up that line graph.
I think ultimately it just had so much to do with how it happened. Like, it just,
and it's because it's
you
Clemson.
Can't lose. You can't. You can't lose one of those baseball games, let alone two of them. Like, you can't lose that big of leads, especially in back to back games.
Agreed. Inexcusable. Just depends on where you go from here. Quickly, the Gators tomorrow, they won 2 out of 3 at LSU. They had a heck of a game 2. Mm-hmm. Came back down, were clutch, tied it up, went to extras, found a way to win it. And then Cags was really good in game 3, and they actually run-ruled LSU in 8 innings. So they're playing with some confidence right now. I'm sure that they're going to be fired up to play Florida State after the Noles took one in their home park. But this is it's a bounce-back opportunity, right? When we talk about how is this team going to respond, well, you get a chance against a high-caliber opponent to try and respond.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to be tough. Like I said, you got to get back on the bus and drive over there, and you got to try to figure out your pitching as soon as possible against a really good lineup. A lineup that like Florida State, is physical, especially at the top. I mean, obviously, Cags and Shelton, and guys like Shelnut as well, and I mean, there's just their offense is going to test you as much as Clemson's did, but it's only a one game setting. But they've already seen you once so far this year. So obviously, Army started game 1 for Florida State against them, but I think Armstrong threw 47 pitches on Saturday. So I don't know if he'll be available 100% in that role. He might be or might not. We'll have to see. I don't think the game notes haven't come out to this point with the probable starters. Obviously, Florida State saw Alex Philpott from Florida on the mound in first game, a freshman, lanky right-hander. But it seems like Florida's starting to figure out their arms now a little bit, especially with all the freshmen they had been using. It seems like they're starting to figure out their formula a little bit more, and that's helping them win the weekend games, but they still have struggled on the midweeks. I think who they lose to last – I think they lost another midweek last week. Yeah, to JU. Yeah. So they're still trying to figure out the midweekers, but – obviously, you see Florida's talent and what they're able to do on the weekends, but you've already got them once this year. You can go there and clinch the series if you go and win. So I don't know the last time we won the series against them.
2014 or 15, something like that. I think it was 2014 or 15. I checked this before we played the game at Florida, so I'll double check it again. I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's been about 10 years. Yeah. That puts it into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope the team is able to flush the weekend and go play baseball. I think when you just play baseball, right, Brett, you have a pretty good team.
Yeah.
It's a team that's capable.
Yeah, it's just, can you flush it on the mound quick enough? Because you're probably going to have to go with a full staff type game, just with how recently you've used everybody and what those guys have been used. And you're probably going to need some freshmen to go out there and throw innings for you against Florida and try to win with some of those guys on the mound. Like, you're going to have to. And you're going to have to bounce back mentally on the mound as fast as possible. And it's going to be a challenge. But, you know, that's why you keep playing baseball and game after game. It's just try to figure it out at some point.
I have a feeling you're going to need a double-digit run scoring output from your offense.
Yeah, I think you hope that you can slug your way to a win.
I think that's what it's going to take this one. It's just kind of feels like the path that it's going to take. Florida's going to be ready to play. I have no doubt in my mind they'll be fired up. And that crowd is usually 65-35 Florida in Jacksonville. It's pretty good. It's a pretty great environment. I think it's one of the things about college baseball I love the most is when they do these neutral site games in state and a couple of rivals meet up, and it's a cool atmosphere at a really cool minor league park. And Brett, we look forward to being there and covering that one. So good stuff from you. I think we've touched on everything. Maybe we'll come back Wednesday night and maybe do a pod previewing Louisville and maybe take a couple of questions as well.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the Florida game if we want to do an instant react or whatever, depending on how that goes.
Just keep eyes and ears peeled. Okay. Well, good stuff, guys. Again, appreciate your listenership. We're in this together.
Season's not over,
definitely not over. We got a lot.
Season's just beginning, folks.
I have a feeling we're going to have another weekend where we're going to be in the same boat. Hopefully not the same
if they lose two games like that again, and
correct,
weekend,
but we will have some sour. We will have some from some sour podcasts still coming. That's just how this goes. And hopefully, we have more excited and optimistic podcasts overall, where we can talk about this baseball team winning some big series, because I think it's on the horizon and they're capable of it. But Brett, if you got nothing else, I'm ready to sign off.
I'm good.
All right, guys. Appreciate you listening. For Brett Nevitt, I'm Aria Masudi. We'll talk to you soon.